Bring the House Resources Committee meeting order for May 2nd, 3:05. What is today? We have Representative Schultz, Representative Larson, Representative Cowdery, Representative Ewing, and myself, Representative Ringstaff. May 4th? We're in a major debate what day it is.
May the 3rd.
The calendar, May the 3rd. I thought it was the 2nd, he thought it was the 4th. Okay, now we got the hard part taken care of. We've got two pieces of legislation today. The first one is HJR 43, the second one is HB 14. HJR 43, the resolution requesting that Beaver Creek and Birch Creek be removed from the designation of wild scenic rivers. This is a resolution that was put in by Representative Bettisworth and I by the request of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. An identical resolution was also introduced on the Senate side and did pass the Senate this morning, I think on a unanimous vote, if I remember correctly. It would be the intentions to try and get through this, take testimony, and pass the resolution on to the basically, the problem is that these areas are established mining areas, been there for alongside of 80 years, putting them into wild and scenic rivers, and there's a concern that that could be detrimental to the economy. So,
through the chair, I suppose by doing this, it would endanger or could prohibit any resource access or development, that possibility?
There is, for the people that are existing in there now, they can still continue to work. The problem is down the road,
potential.
We've got one person signed up to testify on this bill, Brian Allen. Brian.
Thank you. I have maps here of two rivers. Territory we're talking about.
I think there may be some of those already in the packet. Bring your copies off earlier, but that's all right.
My name is Brian Allen. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm a volunteer with the Alaska Environmental Lobby, and we oppose this resolution. The two rivers that we're talking about are both very close to Fairbanks, as you can see from the map, and both are designated as wild rivers. They're the closest wild rivers to Fairbanks and consequently are a major recreational area for people in Fairbanks. The two rivers afford easy trips into the wilderness by canoe. They don't have difficult rapids or other obstacles, and they can be approached by car both at the pickup and the takeout point. So that it isn't an expensive trip, such as going up into the Brooks Range would be, or something like that. The two rivers are very different in the amount of gold they produce. Birch Creek is a major gold-producing river in the Fairbanks area. Beaver Creek does not produce that much. The Wild River corridors are not the entire river. They're outlined on the maps. And the portion of Beaver Creek that's within the Wild River Corridor produces very little gold. Three of the tributaries to Beaver Creek do produce gold, but I would still say it's a minor accumulation compared to some of the other areas around Fairbanks. So that I'm really puzzled that Beaver Creek is included in this bill, because it's not a major gold mining district. Birch Creek, as I mentioned before, does have a lot of gold mining. However, it also has a lot of recreational use. In the past, when the water was running clear, there was a lot of fishing on the river. There's some hunting and trapping done in the area, and it's excellent wildlife habitat. Because it is a short trip, it's a popular trip. It takes from 5 to 8 days, and the local Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts go down it every year. Lots of people plan on doing it. When gold prices were low, mining activity was limited in the area, and recreation was the primary use of that area, so that the mining presence has not been continuous on, nor the only thing that's happened in that area. There are conflicts between mining uses and other uses, and we feel that the Wild River legislation accords rights to all groups and tries to resolve the conflicts. As Representative Ringstad mentioned before, miners who are already established there have some restrictions put on their activities in terms of where they can move their equipment and such, but it does not substantially interfere with their operations. At present, mining would be withdrawn from the corridor itself for future mining claims. However, most of the claims in the area are in the tributaries and not on the corridor itself. About 100 of the claims out of a total of about 2,000 at present are right in the river corridor. So you're not talking about the bulk of the claims in terms of the Wild River corridor. From the point of view of environmentalists, the biggest problem is water quality on Birch Creek. The relevant legislation on that is not the Wild River Act, but rather the Clean Water Act and the state legislation that goes along with that. And at present, for over 300 miles, the river is opaque with placer mining silt. The miners pretty much have had their way. Last year, no miner in the Birch Creek area was brought into court for water quality violations, even though the Department of Environmental Conservation's own report said that of all the mines that they surveyed, most were in violation of both state and federal standards. So water quality is a problem, but at present there really hasn't been much enforcement of the problem. In conclusion, we support methods that would solve the water quality problem, and probably the best one is the total recycle technology for sluicing gold. In other words, the water that sluices the gold would be used over and over to wash the gold out of the gravel and not immediately return to the rivers. And so you don't have the silty water being dumped into the rivers, which clouds it for miles downstream. At present, one mine on the South Fork of Birch Creek, a large operation, plans to use this technology this summer, and we support that operation and other miners who are willing to try this newer technology. Thank you.
Might note for the record here that we've also have Representative Bussell, Representative Liskin, and Representative Baskin with us too. Are there questions for the witness? Representative Cavery?
I was wondering on this Beaver Creek, which direction? I suppose the direction of the flow is up towards the Yukon.
Let's see. Yes. I don't have the map in front of me. Yes, it is to the Yukon. Beaver Creek starts near the Steese Highway. The tributaries do. The better map is on the second page, and flows first west and then north, where the top of the map is the Yukon Flats, and it proceeds very slowly across the Yukon Flats, eventually coming into the Yukon River upstream of the Hall Road Bridge, about, I believe, about 150 miles upstream of the Hall Road Bridge. And often people take out at the Hall Road Bridge, they float down to there.
You've been on this river?
I've been on Beaver Creek.
Is it a swift river? I mean,
it's swift, but easily handled by anybody who has experience with a canoe.
Both directions, or is it one way?
Downstream, yeah. Although it is possible to arrange for a charter to pick you up halfway through the trip, so you're not committed to doing the full trip if you plan ahead and arrange for the charter.
But how? The question, I guess, what if you got all the way down and committed way downstream? You would have to either walk out or arrange some other
canoeing, yeah,
or keep on going. And
yeah, it is a an adventure to that extent, as many remote parts of Alaska are, and you have to plan ahead for it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that's something that people in Fairbanks do on the spur of the moment, but it is something with a little bit of planning and some free time that most people can do. And the area right there where the river takes a very sharp turn is in the White Mountains. There's excellent sheep hunting in that area. There are limestone cliffs that are about 1,500 feet high along there, so it's very beautiful.
I was just a question, if I may, that if you know, for access to the for the beauty of the area, they would also, I suppose, trails or some other way of getting in there besides this river.
Yeah, there are two trails coming off the Elliott Highway near Wickersham Creek that go in to Beaver Creek. One's a winter trail, another is a summer trail. The winter trail is used by snowmobilers a lot. Summer trail is a hiking trail.
So you could, in fact, enjoy the beauty of the area by trail as well as the river. Is that right?
That is true. Also, some of the outfits in Fairbanks charter in there for their great grayling fishing operations.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, basically, when was the Wild Rivers Act enacted? In other words, so this would become a wild river. Has this been set up for a couple of years, or has it been a while?
Well, these rivers were designated wild by ANILCA. The Wild Rivers Act was set up, I believe, in 1964, but at that point didn't include any Alaskan rivers.
Okay, but how long has this actually been a wild, designated as a wild river?
Let's see, ANILCA came in what, 1980 or?
It's only been about 3 years.
Yes. At this point, they're just progressing with the plans for the rivers, and I think that that's part of the reason it's been brought to your attention, is the draft plan for these two rivers just came out from the Bureau of Land Management. And so it's the first time that a lot of people have been confronted with the fact that this has been designated as a wild river.
Representative Larson?
Yes, the mining activities that take place on these rivers, are they more a detriment, say, to the recreational aspect or use of the rivers, or to the fish or wildlife that might depend upon the rivers?
It does depend on the rivers. With Beaver Creek, the mining activity pollutes, obviously pollutes, say, the top 30 miles of the river at most. Some days it hardly affects it at all. And so once you get downstream of that, the effects are not noticeable. At least to the casual observer. I wouldn't, you know, verify that water quality tests wouldn't show anything. With Birch Creek, it's very obvious. The river is almost opaque with a yellowish silt, and that means that there's no fishing on that river. That flow trippers usually get water from tributaries coming into the main stem because they don't want to drink the water in the main stem of the river.
I think basically you may have answered my question, but let me ask it one more
time.
I guess my concern was increased mining activities and the effects that would have. Would those effects be short-term, or would they produce long-term damage?
After the mining stopped?
Yes.
Assuming that the miners, smoothed their tailings and replanted them, which typically in the past they haven't, most of the effects would be temporary, but certainly not all.
Thank you.
Yeah, to your knowledge, was there any kind of mining going on before this was designated as a wild river? And you know if it's been commercial mining, or and did these operations have to close down because it was designated as a wild river?
I don't know of any operations that have closed down because of the wild river designation, but this has historically been mined for a long time, since before Fairbanks was founded, so that there have been active claims ever since then. So it was known as a gold mining district, and I would suggest that when it was designated as a wild river by Congress, they were conscious of the fact that there were gold miners on that river and knew that they had to make provisions so that they could be accommodated and continue to do what they're
but
doing.
Can they now mine on the river as it is set up through a Wild River Act?
Yes. The people with patented claims have both surface and subsurface rights. They do have to file for a plan of operations with the BLM, which is, among other things, includes a water discharge permit.
Thank you. Calvary?
Yes. I was just getting into it's now required that you have to have a mining plan and a settling pond standards and all of this to meet to...
In law it is. In terms of actual enforcement, I would suggest it's pretty lax at this point.
But they are, there is a law that says that you have to have a mining plan and a criteria of a certain criteria in order to use the water and for your operations. Is that true?
I would feel more comfortable with having somebody from BLM explain the technical aspects of the process. But yes, the permit does cover water discharge, how you plan to get access to your claim. There are some state access routes in the area, but other times it may require a permit to cross lands that are under federal control.
And has this area that we're talking about, has it been mined out? Is that your opinion, or are they still precious metals?
It's real hard to get a straight story from miners on how much gold they still have in the ground but judging from their activity, I assume there's a fair amount still there.
Is it active, the whole river, or just the inactive part? What I'm getting at, is there any amount of certainty that the inactive part of the river that's not being mined, that there is a potential in that part of it?
I think that that the river has been fairly well claimed. In other words, there's been ample opportunity for people to stake claims in that area. I don't have an intimate knowledge of where all those claims are, how active they are. I would suggest that the richest areas now are the ones that are in the upper tributaries to the river, because the areas that were lower down were more likely to be dredged out by the old dredges, which couldn't work the upper creeks, and so those are the areas that are still left for miners to go after.
Is it your opinion that if this was the Wild Rivers, designated as Wild Rivers, that it would not allow the rivers to be used, or cargo or getting in? I don't know if that's the case now.
The navigability issue? Or?
Yeah, to navigate for the purpose of mining. I don't know if that's being done now,
well,
but would it
as I understand
restrict
it,
that?
For that area, motorboats are allowed, so that it's a question of whether the rivers themselves are navigable or not, whether you're allowed to use riverboats in that area.
Thank you. Representative Larson?
Yes, thank you. I'm going to need a little bit of help here,
sure,
because my information isn't that great, but the designation of a wild river, of course, grandfathered in certain rights that took place before. One of those rights, of course, would be mining operations. But it's also my impression then that the mining operations could not be carried on at a level greater than what it was before, that it could only be maintained at the level that existed at the time the designation came in place. Is that correct?
I do not think so. In other words, you could work a claim more aggressively than you had before if you had that claim. The problem would be is if you wanted to stake an adjacent claim to the one you already have.
Okay.
But usually that's already been taken by somebody else, and you could purchase their rights from them and move there.
If a person had an inactive claim before the designation was made, could they reactivate and mine that claim after the designation?
Well, the crucial definition is whether the claim is patented or not patented. There have been several solicitors' opinions exactly defining that, the BLM solicitor. Basically, if the claim was patented by a certain date, you get both surface and subsurface rights, which means that you could set up a secondary business that wasn't at all related to mining on that property. You could treat it, well, essentially it is private property. If it's a valid claim, which means that you have been meeting certain standards of getting gold out of it at some time in the past, but not patented, you can still prove it up and patent it. But at that point, you do not have complete surface rights. Your improvements have to be related to mining the property, and if you finish mining it, you have to remove those improvements.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bussell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is a discharge permit transferable?
I do not think so, but I'm not an expert on discharge permits.
In other words, if I went through this process, which I'm sure is lengthy, and submitted my plan and it was approved and I got a discharge permit and I was sick or incapacitated or something and I wanted to represent a county to operate my claim, I couldn't transfer that. That whole operation to
I don't know.
Here you can.
Further questions of the witness?
Mr. Chairman, I think to answer Representative Bussell's question, yeah, that why the water rights? That's what that he talked. You're talking about water rights on a mining platform claim.
I'm talking about discharge permit.
If that permit, if that permit was attached to a corporation, I'm pretty sure it just travels with the corporation. I'm not sure about individual permits.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Are there other persons to testify on this resolution?
Chairman, for the record, my name is Phil Holdsworth, and speaking in general for the Alaska Miners Association. The association has been quite interested in this, primarily because it appears that some progress is being made with DEC and others to begin to classify streams, which has not really been done in Alaska, so that streams could be like they do in the Yukon. They classify streams as mining streams. They then do not have to meet water quality standards. And where you have a stream which is nothing but mining, and there are no fishery involved, or fishery of the whitefish and these kind of fish, grayling, they don't seem to mind a little bit of silt in the water. In fact, it never seems to drive them out at all. That if these streams could be classified in that manner, then it would eliminate the need of meeting water quality standards, which is, you know, pretty difficult. Of course, you have to do it when you're upstream of somebody that's using water for domestic uses, domestic purposes. That's understood. But there are a lot of streams that are mined as placer streams in Alaska, similar to that in the Yukon, that could be classified as an industrial or a mining stream. And we're hopeful that an effort is being made to do this throughout parts of Alaska. And if that were the case, then this would change the situation really here. In answer to Representative Bussell's question, the permit, the effluent permit, is transferable as long as it's on the same operation, just in the case that you suggested as a possibility. That is transferable, just like the water rights for the mining purposes are also transferable.
Representative Larson?
Yeah. By deactivating or increasing the mining operations upon the streams, would that preclude the recreational use of these two streams, or could the recreational use still continue?
Not at all.
Further questions?
No.
Dealing?
Yeah, Phil, basically, Mr. Chairman, is there a need then by taking, in other words, if this is not designated as a wild river, this will allow more mining claims to occur on this river because you feel, and the miners of Alaska, whoever the group is that you represent, want to foresee an increase in mining in this particular area. In other words, there's a potential there that you can't fulfill at this point given the constraints that are on this Wild River Act. Is that right?
Historically, this has been the case, and particularly with the fluctuating price of gold. As was mentioned by the previous witness, there have been slow periods in this area when the price of gold was down and fixed, but it's been very active recently. A flyover last year over this area, where there were 15 operations reviewed by DEC and others, there was only one that was not meeting, at least trying to meet the putting in their settling ponds and trying to meet the requirements of DEC, and that operator was cited. One out of 15 isn't bad, I think, for that for a district right now.
Mr. Chairman, Phil, how many miners would you say, are you familiar with this area here? I mean, through the miners?
Personally, no. I've been in the district years back, but I haven't been over it.
You don't know how many miners are involved here then in this particular thing?
There were 15 operations actually visited on that in this flight last year.
Isn't this also this area up in there where we have the uranium in this particular area?
Well, that's up in the White Mountains, yeah.
In that same area, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it was included in the Yukon Flats Wildlife Refuge. When they found the uranium, then they changed the boundaries to include it up to 3,000 foot elevation.
Thank you, Mr. Holdsworth. Are other persons to testify on this? Seeing none.
I'd like to make a motion that we pass this resolution right to the Rules Committee and ask for an individual recommendation. Ask for an individual recommendation.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, we'll move HJR 43 to the committee with individual recommendations. Second piece of legislation we have before us is HB 14, relating to processing of permits. We've got a Labor and Commerce Committee substitute. And this piece of legislation has been kind of going round and round for quite a while in one form or another. So today, the intent would be today is to get our initial testimony and get a review of the bill and where we're at with it. And then we will bring it back at a later day to do further work on it.
HB 14.
I would like to start with the prime sponsor of the bill, Representative Martin, if you would prepare to enlighten us.
Yes, sir. I don't know if I can do that, but thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to introduce the bill to the committee. I'm going to go into a little length because I know that we have new legislators that are in the committee now, and perhaps going back in the history might be of value to them. Actually, this is the fifth year that such a bill has been before the legislative bodies, both on the Senate side and the House side. And what we were trying to do is a simple reform bill that would streamline permit processing for development within the state in a timely fashion and an orderly fashion. In the past year, though, we had kind of an on-again and off-again situation, mainly from the executive branch. At one time they were real excited about the bill, another time they were real cold, another time they were real excited, another time real cold. And it ended up being stalled in finance. What we were trying to do is, because of new things that came in 1976 and since that time, procedures have gotten confused. And we want to set up a new, there were the new federal guidelines for environmental regulations. There was new Coastal Zone Management Act of 1976, and there was new Corps of Engineers wetland regulation, which greatly complicated the procedure, to say the least. And secondly, there was definitely an apparent, or I shouldn't say an apparent, there was definitely an environmental leaning by the Hammond administration, which caused them to go on and off again, and greatly given confusion. Different agencies didn't know what their rights were. And then there was turf protection. And if one person said the permit was okay, the next division said it wasn't okay. Then enters this great group called DPTP, Division of Planning and Policy. They were supposed to bring in all the regulation pertaining to federal government as well as the state government. And then they set up their own procedures. But then still each agency was permitted to oversee permit process and wait on those as long as they care to. Code protection ended up being around, but then DPDP had the final veto of all permits. It became a system fraught with confusion and with different state agencies actually taking very different conflicting positions. The new form that you had before us is basically what we had later. I understand that the Labor and Commerce Committee did make some major change in it, which was all right with me. I did not participate at all the hearings, so just the introduction one. Basically, what we were trying to do is establish a lead agency that major industry or anyone knew they could go to begin the permit process. We were trying to establish a maximum period, time period, according to classification to permit. If a person wants to permit in certain timber areas, timber industry, they knew they had 60 or 90 days. In mining, maybe 60, 90, or 120 days. In oil, maybe 120 days. But at least they knew they had some time commitment and not wait on each different agency to review and review like we do sometimes in committee work. As mentioned before, in the past, the executive branch did not give the leadership that was desired, and many agencies kept on using the executive branch as the excuse. Now I think with the new bill, we have a reasonable set of rules and regulations that we can put into law, and there won't be any confusion, hopefully, as to who has the rights. I know there's a lot of people in here, I'm going to cut mine off real short, who are vitally interested in bills, who work together. I know the oil industry, the timber industry, and the mining industry for many months have been working on this bill in detail, and suddenly seem to be a solid fund in support of it.
Thank you, Representative Martin. Are there questions, Representative Martin?
Just one question. I obviously have a whole bunch of questions for this piece of legislation. I always have.
I heard you were supportive of it.
Well, I didn't sign that. The history should also reflect that there have been a lot of problems dealing with this piece of legislation and the variety of forms that it's taken. Initially, the first piece of legislation that was introduced was purportedly to be to have been written by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, and obviously if it's something that they put together, that it would be in their favor absolutely in terms of time guidelines, in terms of issuing of permits, and who in fact would be responsible for the issuance of those permits. The one question I do have, actually maybe I can tie it into two questions, but the one question I have is in terms of the powers of the local governing body, the local government, what powers do you think the local governments should have in the permitting procedures, and how much consideration should be given to their demands in terms of what kinds of permits will or will not be issued?
Mr. Tim, if I may, Representative Vasquez, it's a very fair question. And I thought at one time last year that we did have this answered. And we're basically talking about the coastal zone management groups and different local interests. It was our understanding last year in Labor and Commerce that this would be the first step that any agency or any industry, business, or government will go to the local people and work out what they wanted, understanding what they needed in permits and things like that, what they want to develop, what they want to explore and anything. And once they had the blessing of the local government, then, or Coastal Zone Policy Council, then they could go forward and do what was necessary with the state agency. But what happened towards the end last year is that we got hung up in a couple words. One was called the great weight, and then no one could really define what we meant by great weight factors. And then it was changed to substantive consideration. Was that the other term? So no one could really define what we meant by substantive consideration. Eventually, what really happened, though, I thought we really had a bill ready to be okayed by the government administration until the last thing that Coastal Zone asked for was final veto power, not only to begin the process, but to end the process. And I thought that would be too much because there are some overriding state interests in the development of the resources we have that may be superior to local concerns. And certainly those things should be weighed out within the reviewing process of permit rather than finalizing it that local zones have total veto power.
Further questions, Representative Vasquez?
Well, the other question revolves around the time guidelines that you said. In fact, I haven't gotten to it yet, but one of the stipulations you have in this piece of legislation says that if, in fact, the timeline has passed without action by an agency, that the permit will be issued. Don't you think that if, in fact, you're going to do that, you should have longer time periods for agencies and or the local government to the industry requesting the permit?
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the values of the lead agencies. At one time when we were saying some classifications have 90-day permit procedures. Within 90 days, if both parties agree that we would stop that time period for a while. Say maybe the local coastal people came up with the question, maybe industry itself came up with the question and want the clock to stop. So it stops for a week or 2 weeks and then it kicks off again. So there's agreement. There's also, and I don't know if it's in the bill that came through the labor and commerce an appeal process, which was very much needed, so that someone that was absolutely refused a permit has the right to find out, well, why? You know, there were so many reasons in the past that people were not given permits through delay process, through confusion, through everything else. People were hamstrung.
In section, the section dealing with the lead agency, on the one hand you have the Department of Natural Resources as a lead agency, but when you get down to section E, you specify that the Office of the Governor, the Division of Policy Development and Planning, shall be the lead agency for permits on private lands.
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned before, I did not read the final report from Labor and Commerce, and if it were their decision that, depending on the type of permit needed, I would have no problem there.
Doesn't that get away from your lead agency concept? I mean, there are two lead agencies then identified for...
When the permit, Mr. Chairman, is requested, then it will be appointed that either DNR is the lead agency or the administration is the lead agency. At the time of beginning the permit, my understanding, it will be designated which one is which.
Based on what?
Based on the type of the permit, whether it be public lands, private lands.
Representative Liskin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Part of the questions have been answered, which I had in mind. Representative Martin, what the opponents, you say about 5 years you've been trying to get this type of legislation through?
Yes, sir, some kind of simple procedure.
Can you tell me, in just a few short words, what is the basis for opposition to legislation of this type?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, some of it was legitimate in the sense that there was confusion in the new federal laws, but then also it became very clear in the 2 years I've been involved in it that there were overwhelming conflicts of interest with environmental leanings, very much so, both from the state administration as well as individuals. And agency, turf protection and agency became a very bad problem.
Well, you feel today we have coordination between the state agencies to perhaps look at this real close and maybe do something about it?
Well, it's a new baby.
Today.
Who knows how a new baby will turn out?
We've got a whole new brand new set of commissioners now.
We hope.
Well,
the thing is that if you have a set of laws, maybe those are easier or harder to circumvent than with everyone running in confusion with their own regulations.
Representative Larson?
Yeah, just a general question. Basically, this bill, did it kind of originate with the problems that came up 4 or 5 years ago with coastal zone management and the permitting system? And
well, not only with coastal zone came in, sir, before in 1976, and that was one set of problems. Then the federal wetland problems came in, and then the new regulation for Army Corps of Engineers, which gave them extensive control and authority within Alaska that they did not have in other states. So the Corps of Engineers was the last thing that was thrown in with these other new federal laws, and then, of course, our own state. Basically, I would say, Mr. Chairman's committee, it seems like that the laws are there. Any agency can proceed with proper procedures now. It's just that evidently we got to push bureaucracy and in the past the administration to follow new guidelines.
Representative Larson?
Yeah, just a hypothetical situation. The mining operation on Beaver Creek that we just heard about, someone wishes to establish an operation there, they would need a permit. And through this single permitting process, then, would the only ones that would be allowed to, say, give input on whether the permit should be granted or not, would it be the state agency, or would a private individual, or would a municipal government, or local government be able to give input into this process? Or?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, for me, it's my understanding that it will be a routine situation once a person wants a permit for mining X place. Then either through the state administration and or the DNR, they would be the lead agency. That lead agency will contact all parties of interest, the local government, the local coastal management group, private people in that area, other state agencies, but they will all funnel the reports to the lead agencies, and they will be given a time restraint. And then the lead agency does the weighing and the balancing, and they will be hearing on it. You won't have a subdivision down here and a subdivision down here saying, yes, you can have a permit. No, you can't have a permit. We need more time. Give it to them now. The lead agency will decide, and whoever is taking that permit will have one agency they can contact. They will also get the reports that lead agency is getting to say yes, no, or maybe so.
Representative Gall?
Thank you, sir. I just have a couple of brief questions, if I may. On page 4, section B, it discusses the functions of the lead agency, and it states that, among other things, that the lead agency will consider documented facts, that they may, in their discretion or in its discretion, reach contrary opinions or conclusions. It goes on the next page to say that that was on line 26 through 28. It goes on page 5 to say the lead agency shall balance competing factors. And then it says, no other resource agency other than the lead agency has primary expertise in the balancing of competing factors. Let's say you've got the Department of Fish and Game out in some area that historically has been used for some fisheries purpose, and they want to build some sort of project there. Sitting on that land is a mining claim or a potential mining development, something of that sort. But because it's a fish and game project and they're given the lead on it, it then becomes their right to essentially dismiss evidence of the Department of Natural Resources and take it upon themselves, or to cite the opposite example. You have a mine that's under consideration. DNR becomes the lead agency. Fish and Game points out that there's an active anadromous stream in the area. And DNR says, yeah, but that's just not as important as what we're doing, and they make the decision. Don't you think that that kind of a situation where interagency debate, if you will, is put squarely in the hands of one agency or another, depending on the nature of the project for which the permit is being applied, rather than based on the overall concerns of an area or its citizens or its landmass? Don't you think that's going to end up leading to rather heated dispute and the accusation of unfair decision-making and possibly litigation?
For me, it probably will, but at least a decision perhaps will be made. That's the main thing. In the past, it was best that all these people kept themselves well informed with jobs, because they could drag out a little simple permit for so long that they were all kept happy arguing with each other and nothing substantially was being done. And the poor person that asked for the permit is still standing there. Said, well, Fish and Game says this, and Environmental says that, and Wetland says this, and you had to go see him. Then you go to Fish and Game, yeah, we agree with you that if you talk to Wetland and tell them this. Wetland, yeah, well, we agreed if you agree, but you talk to that guy in charge of the mining. Someone has to make a decision and balance all the factors. That's what we're trying to get to. We at the legislative body do the same thing. We hear much testimony from competing points of view, and we make a decision. So here's the idea of getting someone the responsibility in making the final decision.
Representative Gall, that question was specifically asked also in Labor and Commerce. The intent is somebody's responsible.
Okay. The intent.
Question?
Yes, thank you. The intent of the question, though, clearly it is in everybody's interest to streamline the permitting process. I mean, I just can't imagine any circumstance where objection, if any, and maybe you don't have any objection, would you have to the permitting process, that is the lead agency, if you will, being an agency which is not directly vested in the project, which does not have a particular partisan interest in the project. For example, the Office of the Governor, such as would be on private land, or if someone has an objection to the Governor's office, some other independent, non-involved agency who could do the paperwork, who could make sure that everybody gets their proper hearing, who could organize those individuals who must collectively make a decision, and to avoid the appearance that one agency will be competing with another unfairly, which I think, frankly, would, in the long run, slow things down, as those kinds of decisions would be challenged by the person who feels, well, my agency got to make its point, but they didn't have to listen under the law.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Gold, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What Mr. Gold said is quite logical. And in the past 4 years, we felt that, you know, there would be reason. But in the past 4 years, we felt that there was no reason. It was best for everyone not to make any decision rather than offend the opposing group. And that's where the problem was. It's best that we don't get on the wrong side of each other, and we'll all be happy by no decision.
Representative Larson?
Yes, one of the things that concerns me as I read over here is in the time frame of the issuance of the permit. I see where we have a Class 1 permit, which is generally routine, it's done within 30 days. And Class 2 routine is something that's more complex, maybe as much as 65 days or maximum of 120. I guess my question is that when we decide to build the gas liquid pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Point McKenzie, can we obtain a permit in 120 days, or would something like that be much more complicated?
Mr. Chairman, sometimes you might discuss what is a major job or a minor job, and we've had some major jobs done in Alaska before. But in going through this last year, I think that we come down with reasonable time periods now. Because some people wanted to completely invent the wheel. And so for you and I to draw a wheel maybe 20 minutes or 5 days. Others might decide to take a year, but that wheel ain't quite round. So here again, it's pure semantics, you know. The delays we heard and examples we had last year, Ms. Larson, were absolutely ridiculous. I mean, they were just so asinine because people, in one case, it was a pipeline over the Kaparis River. There's two pipes going there already. The guy had testimony was talking about the color of the third one. You know, so.
See, what my major concern here is, Representative Martin, is that within the 120 days for such a complicated project as that, I don't think we could really come up with a report that could lead to the issuance of a permit if due to the environmental questions alone. Or at least, would it be so full of holes that such a project could be delayed for years? Because we tried to do the job within 120 days.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I haven't made the latest vision, but originally what we had was a stop clock method so that with both parties' consent that they could stop the clock and consider the a maximum impasse that they came in with. And if that's still applicable here, I don't know, but...
We've got a couple other witnesses. I'd like to try and get those in here also. I don't want to cut Representative Martin off.
Oh, no, you must.
But I'm sure you're more than willing to come back and talk to us if we want you again.
I don't think you can stop for one meeting on this bill. Lots left, though, yeah.
Thank you, Representative Martin.
Thank you.
Joe Gilhoff.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Joe Gelthoff, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. And I'm here just very briefly to appraise you that the administration is indeed working on the subject of permit reform. And while I can't explain what really went on or didn't, you know, did or didn't go on in the previous administration, I can tell you that the current administration is committed very strongly to coming up with some meaningful permit reform. And I think there is agreement among all of the affected agencies, particularly the natural resource agencies, that there should be some streamlining and that there needs to be some reform, particularly that will help the applicant. A fair amount of discussion about the agency's problems, perceived problems, but I know the current governor is very concerned about the applicant and making sure they get the whole package of permits they need in a timely fashion, and that they not just have somebody that gives them information and somebody else, you know, process them, that they can get into the system, that they can get the whole package of permits, and there are numerous. And that they can get on with the activity that they have in mind. In that respect, the administration believes strongly that, you know, not only the agency should have an ability to look at projects in a coordinated fashion, but that the municipalities, the public, and other groups ought to at least have notice of what's going on and ability to comment, not veto a project or anything, but so that everybody has as much information as possible.
Questions, Mr. Fennell? Representative Schultz?
Yes, I was just wondering, the administration is committed to streamline the permit process. I was just wondering what kind of a timeline have you established for yourself in coming up with permit reform?
Well, there's been a series of ongoing meetings over the past really 4 months, consisting of working groups, primarily from Department of Natural Resources, Environmental Conservation, and Fish and Game, and two law is also involved in that, as is the, whatever it is that we call OMB. Whatever they're going to be. And I guess there have been, 7 formal meetings, and there sure has been a lot of informal contact, and the level it's at now, where I perceive it's at is, there's been a tremendous amount of staff work done. A lot of the deputy commissioners are talking about it now, and it's probably real close to where just they'll present some ideas to the various commissioners. And this has been a problem in state government for so long. I don't mean to sound optimistic, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were some fairly comprehensive solutions in the next 2 or 3 months. And they would be very much, very largely internal solutions, again, with the applicant in mind.
Representative Schultz?
Yes, that's what I was wondering about. So for being optimistic about this somewhat, a person could expect something by the latter part of this summer, the first part of September, that that all the departments concerned or involved in the permitting process, regardless of what they may be coming forth with a streamlined version of the process itself.
Yes, sir. And if I can add that what is not being talked about is yet another layer of permits or some kind of a super permit, but it's taking all the existing permits and making sure that the applicant can figure out what is needed for a particular project and receive all of those kind of up front without going permit after permit after permit. And you know, you receive one and then you have to get another one done.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll just follow up on that. On page 2 of this particular piece of legislation, do you think it's when they were classifying as class 1 and class 2 permits, do you think it's out of line to realistically expect that permits could be issued within 30 days and within 75 days and things of that nature?
Well, Representative Schultz, I think there is a class of permits, or there are kinds of permits, where it's probably appropriate to issue them even sooner than 30 days. And there's been a lot of discussion about different kinds of permits, and some should go and almost over the counter with minimal review. And others, for example, oil and gas exploration on state land in the coastal zone where there's salmon all around, surely it wouldn't be appropriate to give all of the permits within 30 days. But there has been a great deal of discussion, and I can assure you the administration is committed to providing a whole package of permits after sufficient review, just as soon as possible.
Representative Larson, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over the past several years, we had a proposed project within the Nuskasusitna Borough, and as a result of that proposed project, of course, we identified over 63 federal and state agencies in which we were going to have to contact for a series of permits. So therefore, I agree with the philosophy that you have just stated. However, I think I also agree with Representative Schultz in that it's time we had more than a philosophy that we can develop it. So do you have any comments that would be directly in relation to the bill that we have, as to the administration's point of view on it, or do you feel that the developing of another process might be the way to go?
My understanding is the administration hasn't taken a formal position yet at this point for this particular piece of legislation.
Not on this particular, nor will I now, except to say we are working on permit reform, and I think we can do about 90% of what needs to be done internally, and perhaps next session the legislature could help, we could all help one another finish up what remains to be done.
Representative Baskin?
In relation to this bill, is the administration leaning towards or away from a lead agency concept?
Representative Baskin, at this time, that is an area that's under discussion. There's seems to be much sentiment that there ought to be an entity within state government where an applicant can go, not just for information, but that will help the applicant all the way through, that will provide information on what's needed, that will give assistance on circulating all the paper. Help all the way through.
I think that was close to you. Yes, they're leaning towards or away from.
I interpret it as yes, but probably no.
Something like that.
Well, if I can.
I think Mr. Geldof's position is that the administration hasn't taken a position, and he's not here to try and present one for him, so we don't need to put him between a rock and a hard place on that one.
If I can, the term lead agency has become a loaded term, and it seems to mean different things to different people, and we sort of agreed among the administration working group to kind of just stop using the term lead agency and to focus on what we need to do for the applicants. Yeah, I guess that was
good. We've got a couple more people who'd like to testify here, and you see several have already committed to other meetings, so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Geldof. Jane Nelson.
I had some prepared testimony I was going to read. Some of it has been covered.
Jay, just for your own information, we will be bringing this up again. I get the impression you're unsure if you would rather hold off and present it another
time. Well, it may be covering some
of
the same ground, but perhaps I could, I would actually like to go through it.
Okay.
I apologize for reading this, but it's a complicated issue. I would like to state it clearly. I'd like to start out by presenting a brief review of the history of the permit reform issue in Alaska, and actually it applies to almost every state in the Union. In the late 60s and early 1970s, primarily under Presidents Nixon and Ford, the federal government enacted numerous environmental laws designed to bolster protection for the deteriorating quality of our waters, land, and air. States, including Alaska, followed with their own laws designed to protect the public's health, safety, and welfare, as well as to allocate limited public resources to specific private interests. In fact, these laws have worked rather well, and in many areas of the country, the environment is cleaner today than it has been for decades. With these laws came permits, lots of permits. Now we have permits for all facets of environmental and public health protection. Water quality permits, seismic permits, easement permits, tideland permits, solid waste permits, and many, many others. The point to remember, though, is that these permits work. They do protect the public's health and welfare, and they do successfully allocate scarce public resources to specific private interests. Keep in mind that this bill does not address, nor should it address, the number of permits issued for a particular activity. Industry gripes about having to obtain numerous permits are not germane. Permit reform should not address the problem of how to adequately protect the public resources and still allow appropriate projects to go forward with a minimum delay. This bill does not address how, in other words, how many permits are issued, and that's, have to be dealt with as a totally separate issue. The Alaska Environmental Lobby, on behalf of the Alaskan environmental community, supports a smooth, efficient permit process, one that protects public resources and provides for adequate public notice and input. We support a process that issues valid permits and denies or modifies those permits which are clearly not in the public interest. In Alaska, as elsewhere, the numerous new environmental laws gave rise to numerous new permits. This pile of permits has created major administrative problems. In the late 70s, the delays in permit issuance were common, classic red tape, wrapped up many permits for months. What happened next? Two things. Bills were introduced in the legislature to address the permit reform issue, and the Hammond administration began working on a set of reforms to administratively eliminate problems with the issuance of permits. These processes continued side by side through 1980, 1981, and 1982. A permit reform bill did not pass during those years. But what happened to the administrative reforms? If you'll take the time to look, I think you'll see that many of industry's complaints about state permits have dissipated. Administrative reforms over the past 3 years, and I understand continuing reforms, as you just heard, have eliminated bottlenecks in the state permitting process. Remaining problems with permit reform are procedural, and hence administrative, and not statutory in nature, which is, I guess, what the Assistant Attorney General just said. What we have here is a non-issue, or an issue whose time has passed. We feel that statutory permit reform is totally unnecessary. Why then has House Bill 14 been introduced when much of the reform this bill purports to encourage is already a fact? HB 14 has, in fact, been crafted to, one, limit public participation, two, limit interagency cooperation, and three, limit local control over decision-making, not per se to reform the permitting process. HB 14 is similar to the 1981 permit reform bill, which then Attorney General Condon termed biased legislation. This bill, like its earlier model, in the words of the Attorney General, these are quotes, contains a central provision that is unconstitutional, two, is primarily designed to deny local governments and the public any involvement in the state permit decisions, three, threatens far more frequent litigation and has a far greater potential for project delay than existing law, four, will coerce state agencies into denying a permit rather than let a deadline run. In short, this bill does not achieve the legitimate goals of permit reform because it is really designed to achieve a goal that supporters apparently do not want to acknowledge, dismantling of the state's permit process. This bill will make issuance of state permits a farce. If permits are automatically issued within 30 or 75 days after they are received, and if public and local governments are not notified of their existence or are precluded from reviewing them, what is the purpose of issuing a permit? We conclude that the only possible purpose can be an attempt to deceive the public into thinking the state is protecting its resources. Thus, we strongly object to this bill because it seeks to deceive the people of this state. If the state legislature wants the state to stop making decisions about public resources, we urge you to do so, to so inform the public openly, honestly, and directly, and not through the guise of permit reform. To illustrate our objections to this bill, in addition to its lack of need, I've selected three particularly onerous examples of HB 14's attempt to warp the permit process even beyond constitutional limits. First one, decisions on complex projects. Clearly, some projects' permits cannot be issued in 30 or 75 days. You heard that explained. Most permit reform proposals have contained a provision allowing for a time extension for complex or unusually complex projects. This bill is unique in providing a time limit of 120 days on the extension for complex projects and in allowing the applicant to appeal the decision on a time extension to the Superior Court. The 120-day limit is totally unrealistic. Although 4 months may sound like a long time, it is important to remember that this time limit applies to all projects, even the biggest, for example, the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline, the MX missile siting example, for example, and Outer Continental Shelf leasing vast contracts. The provision allowing the applicant only to appeal the decision on the time extension is inconsistent with basic principles of administrative law and is probably unconstitutional. An appeal is not usually allowed from administrative decision until a final decision has been issued. An interlocutory appeal interrupts the administrative process. If everyone is satisfied with the decision on the permit, why appeal the decision on the time extension? Courts do not favor such appeals because they often turn out to be a waste of time. Moreover, it is unlikely that a court would decide the appeal on the time extension before the agency could issue a final decision on the permit. If an appeal provision is allowed to stand, it will probably be construed to allow anyone to pursue an appeal on that extension issue. Under the equal protection clauses of both the Alaska and the United States constitutions, state laws cannot discriminate against particular individuals. Rather than invalidate an unconstitutional provision such as this, courts often interpret it to comply with constitutional requirements. The second, automatic issuance of permits. The automatic approval and attendant judicial review provisions are perhaps the most ill-advised features of this bill. Since permits are automatically approved and they are not denied within the inflexible 30 or 75 day time periods, an agency that has doubts or questions about a permit must and simply will deny the permits. The automatic approval provision illustrates how the bill will actually prevent the state from achieving the goals of permit reform. The provision of this bill that governs court review of permits that have been, quote, automatically issued is unrealistic and also probably unconstitutional. Any provision that protects one party, the applicant, more than another, the state or members of the public, violates equal protection again. Moreover, as a practical matter, courts will not uphold government decisions that are made without any basis. Most automatically issued permits will be automatically rejected by the courts. The third is lead agency. This bill transfers control over coastal management from local and government and state agencies with coastal resource expertise to the state agency that is primarily responsible for developing projects, the Department of Natural Resources. This bill allows DNR to reject, without reason, comments of local districts or other resource agencies. It also ignores the sound principle that it is inappropriate for a development-oriented agency to be the lead agency for coastal consistency determinations connected with its own projects. There are inherent conflicts in such an arrangement. Clearly, were this bill needed, it would require major revisions to be legally and politically acceptable. It rides roughshod over public input. It rides roughshod over local participation. It rides roughshod over interagency cooperation. It is bad legislation, at best unneeded, and at worst, it's counterproductive to its stated purpose. Representative Martin indicated that there were environmental concerns with this bill. There are environmental and many other concerns, and the fact that it didn't get through in 3 years should indicate something to this body.
Representative Schultz?
Yes, I have about three questions here. Number one, first of all, specifically, you mentioned about two or three different times that this particular piece of legislation was unconstitutional. Can you give me specifically what
Sure.
is unconstitutional? The second question, while you're looking for that, was that I've missed something here. I didn't read anywhere in here where it said that the agency had to issue the permit. It just says that a permit would be issued or a final decision would be made within X number of days, 30 days, 75 days, 120
no,
days.
If they don't issue it within 30 days, it will be automatically approved.
Well, I mean, okay.
And what would happen
but
then?
But if they could, within the 29th day, they can say no permit.
That's right, which is one reason.
For the second day.
Which is one reason that you ought to be suspicious, because if they deny it on the 29th day based on too little information, the applicant can sue. If they approve it on the 30th day through inaction, an affected party could sue. What this will amount to is a lot of losses. You have a third question?
Yes, this is somewhat not related exactly to this bill, and I was just wondering if you're familiar with a forestry bill that is coming up before too long.
Somewhat.
Yeah, and I was just wondering if you were in favor of that piece of legislation.
The forestry bill?
Yes.
Yeah. It's been worked on and by a variety of interests in Fairbanks for the last several years.
Which would possibly, if I may, which may do some of the very things that you just, when you closed your remarks and saying it's riding roughshod over public opinion, testimony, and everything else. There hasn't been much public testimony or maps drawn or the corridors specifically defined to the people that are being affected in that very area of where the state forest is built. So I just throwing that out. So some of the very same things that you said about this particular piece of legislation would also apply to that when it comes to public input.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schultz, I have not been involved in the forestry bill other than last year and this. I understand it's been around for a while. There have been teleconferences on it and hearings in Fairbanks at least, perhaps not in your district. Support for the bill has been uniform among all interest groups. The bill is not yet through the legislature, and I assume that this group can have a telepathic ability.
Let's not wander too far off the subject. You'll get other meetings to go. I'm supposed to be upstairs.
Exactly. I didn't want to. And I'm not saying that I'm not in favor of that particular piece of legislation, but I was just trying to parallel the thoughts here.
Sure.
Representative Larson?
For and against.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. He had one other question about the constitutionality. If you look on page 3, lines 11 through 14, says, if an appeal of a permit issued by operation of this subsection, the record shall be considered in the light most favorable to the applicant. That's not...
Right. 11 through 14.
On page 3. Specifically, that's one of the references about the constitutionality. A similar case in California, and a similar law was thrown out on the basis of unconstitutionality, because you can't give a presumption to one side or the other. But it's illustrative, I think, of the entire bill. I mean, this bill was written, obviously, from one point of view.
Representative Larson, question?
Yes, thank you. Of course, I agree that the philosophy of the permit system is to better protect the public. I also heard exponents today, Mr. Chairman, that we should have a philosophy to better serve the public by facilitating the permit system and probably have a single permit system. And I guess my question to you would be then, do you agree with that latter philosophy, that we need to do something to better serve the people, but you don't agree that this is the procedure to do it, or?
Yes, and yes.
Yes,
I would
yes.
say that...
I got two yeses, so I remember
that. That as a matter of public policy, we would much prefer to see the decision-making in the governor's office, simply because the ultimate responsibility lies with the governor, as it is. And why is it, in some cases, we may not get what we consider to be as sympathetic a hearing as we would like. In the long run, it's probably the fairest place to put the decision making. We would support some sort of independent group whose goal or job was not to have expertise in any specific area, but simply to be facilitators, to take comments from other agencies, get them all together, and decide on these permits in an expeditious manner. Professional bureaucrats, if you will.
If I may just follow up. What I hear you say then, if it was an attempt, say, by the state to obtain a permit from some federal agency, permitting agency, that you would much rather see the agent be the governor's office than the Department of Natural Resources?
I was referring to an independent, a private person getting a permit from the state, going to a body whose goal was to serve the applicant.
One of the things that I was alluding to here, and this is that, of course, many of the permits that we need are issued by federal agencies as well as state, and under this bill, so it's the lead agency or the only agency that will be allowed then to testify before the federal agency would be the Department of Natural Resources. And what I hear you saying is that you'd feel much more comfortable if it was a more neutral agency such as the governor's office. Is that correct?
Yes, actually, I'm getting over my head on that commenting between state and federal, but I would guess that the position that the state took on that permit, federal permit, could be a negotiated position with all the affected departments. However, once that position was selected, just as the administration does now, they could, any one person that had knowledge of it could present that information to the not to say the DNR wouldn't be the one presenting the state's position to a federal permit process, but to have an independent, detached, say, group to actually facilitate the state permits is what we would like to see.
I'm sorry, just one brief follow-up.
I'm going to have to make it brief. We've got one more person still to testify. So
from your earlier comments, maybe I interpreted taken out of context, but the Department of Natural Resources is basically developmental oriented. And I guess I was interpreting that you said you would like some other agency as to be the lead agency for that reason to temper, say, the developmental and the environmental concerns.
Well, of course, if we wrote this bill, we might put DEC as the lead agency.
That's my...
We're willing to compromise.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Only a couple of comments here. I believe you said that you would rather have the governor's office make the final decisions on these permits.
Well, something... probably under the governor's office.
Where you have... Well, actually, what you have, a jack of all trades and a master of none, really. To be
right.
Blunt. I think it would probably be ahead of the game. We had somebody knowledgeable, like DNR or what have you, on these permits. Be my comment. You struck on a number of permits. Could you explain a little bit more on that number of permits?
This bill
did not address the number of permits.
It does not address the number of permits.
But what is really the importance of that?
Well, when I hear industry testifying this, they say, Giddy's horse. Well, actually, I have yet to hear a horror story of how long it's taken to get a permit. As I understand it, in the last two or so years, the permit process has smoothed out considerably from the late 70s, and that in actuality, there are not big problems with getting permits like there were three or four years ago. And yet, when industry testifies, there was one company testified in House Labor and Commerce hearings. One of their complaints was that they needed to get 34 permits for a project. Well, that doesn't really, it's not really relevant to this process because the number of permits is not even touched by this. They'll need those 34 permits regardless of whether this legislation passes. And so I don't want, you know, the permit reform is kind of a motherhood issue. It's like everybody inherently knows that it's slow, but do you know that it's slow? In fact, I haven't seen industry here to complain yet. Maybe they are in private, but until there's some evidence that there's a real need to address the problem, I wonder why the bill's being put forward.
Well,
because someone from industry to testify after you get done, so
if,
maybe you'll hear more about it.
If every permittee qualify for the federal impact statements, then I guess you would agree with that, then. Otherwise, everything is being met.
Excuse me.
The federal impact statements from the environmental impact statements.
Yes.
If they met their standards of qualification, then it would be Mox Nicks. How many permits were issued then?
Yeah.
But would you agree to that then, if they met the environmental impact statements?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, offshore oil development, or which would involve fishing, or anything like this, to affect the timber industry, affecting the development of what have you.
The permits that this would address, those state permits, which are totally independent from the federal impact statement process.
Well, yeah, that'd be state permits, but still would have to comply a lot of them with the federal impact statement, because there's leases held on coastal
right.
areas around here which have to meet federal impact statement before you could ever proceed to mine on them, so they're both
sure.
involved.
In fact, I think if you look into it, you'll find that the Army Corps of Engineers is far more of a problem than all the state agencies put together.
I just want to throw it in and see what you, if you agree to that, though, if it met the criteria.
Still not sure I understand the question.
Okay, at one time I held a mining lease, prospect claims at Icy Bay. Before you could begin to mine, and you had to meet the federal impact statements on before the state would issue a lease for operation. So it's a permit system involved.
Right.
So you got federal and state have to mesh up.
That's one thing an independent permit agency could be facilitating.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Got one more person to testify listed, John Tinglegauss from Steel Alaska, and I might pose this to you, Mr. Tinglegauss. We will be having scheduled for Monday, beginning of the week. I know most of the committee's already gone, and I've got a meeting in 5 minutes upstairs. If you would prefer to wait and address us, it's either Monday or Tuesday, and address us first at that point.
That makes sense, Mr. Chairman. I'm here on behalf.
I know you had testified in Labor and Commerce.
Right.
And had a substantial amount of testimony and information. I don't want to try and squeeze you into 2 minutes if you feel you would prefer to have more.
Well, I'm afraid of that too, Mr. Chairman. Sea Alaska, as you know, supports this bill, and I would probably want to spend a few minutes trying to put the committee's mind at ease on some of the negative comments that it's just received. And I'm afraid that 2 minutes might not be enough time.
Yeah, I hate to put you off, you know, so if you want to try and do something quickly, that's fine, but if you'd rather hold off till first week.
I don't have a short version.
Okay. Okay, we'll do it that
okay,
way.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I don't think there's any short version on that.